News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8.07. Mobile Mornings. Another segment of Let's Chat with the Candidates, and we're going to do that today with Congressman Barry Moore, who's also the U.S. Senate candidate.
Yeah, and that primary coming up on Tuesday. It's been a long and windy road, and we're almost there for a majority of the races that we'll be voting on in Alabama. Good morning, Congressman. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Hey, great to be on with you guys. I appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, I guess it was downtown, last time we ran into Barry Moore was at the...
Yeah, the Veterans Day parade last year. It was cool seeing you there. And I'm sure since then it has just gotten wild with this Senate race.
Brother, it has. You know, I currently have 9 counties and 780,000 people in Congress. But when you're doing 5 million people in Alabama and 67 counties, between trying to vote in Washington, D.C., right? I mean, we got a two-vote majority, so I have a job to do here. So, yeah, I don't see my house in South Alabama much, fellas, about one night every 20 nights. But my dogs don't even know who I am anymore,
And I guess you're still filing legislation, right? This Americans First Immigration Act?
Yeah, I dropped that last week to codify 5 of President Trump's executive orders to kind of get this immigration, kind of put that thing into law, because we got a problem. You know, every time the executive branch changes, the fellow with the phone and the pen begins to make changes, and very often what Biden did and even Obama, but the border especially under the prior administration, Joe Biden, man, they just opened that thing up. You had Disney Fast Passes coming into the country. And so it was just a mess. And so now we're trying to really codify some of the president's executive orders. So next time it'll take an act of Congress, which is slow, but it'll take that to undo the border policies that the president is trying to put in place to secure our border.
Well, as far as the campaign, you've already got President Trump's endorsement, Freedom Caucus support. You got strong name ID in portions of the state of Alabama, I guess you could say. What's your argument that you're the man for the job?
Well, I think there's good people in the race, guys, no doubt. I mean, and I appreciate any time people step up and are willing to serve. But I think for me, it's just I've been in D.C. for 5 years, and I have a record. And nobody else running has a legislative record. And the record is one that I'm so very proud of. I mean, being one of the most conservative members in the country. And just a few weeks ago now, Heritage Action sent out of 435 U.S. House members, they scored all of them. There are only 11 that got a 100, and I was one of the 11. So these are third parties. So when I'm talking about the race, people run in the Republican primaries. They say, hey, I'm a Trump guy. I'm going to support the president, and I'm conservative. But for me, I've been with the president and have been in the fight with him. And in addition to that, my record from third party folks will tell you I'm one of the most conservative members in the country. And as we're looking to replace Tommy Tuberville, he and I came to D.C. at the same time in that Senate seat. He has a 95 Liberty score. I have a 96. So we're two guys that vote a lot. We got a relationship with the Oval Office. We can call the president. So those things matter for Alabama.
You know, and we're talking with Congressman Barry Moore, of course, a Senate candidate, and that the actual primary election's coming up on Tuesday. And you've positioned yourself as an outsider, a fighter. You've been in Congress for a few years now. You still feel like you're an outsider in some ways. You got the president's endorsement. Kind of expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, and I think it's important to know that President Trump's an outsider. I mean, he came in here to fix this system, and he asked us to run for Congress, and we did. And so when you come up here and join the House Freedom Caucus, guys, you're amongst about 40 people out of 435 that are truly fighting the system. And so we're never truly insiders in that respect. We don't always have the help from the special interest groups, and we battle this thing called the swamp. So, yeah, I'm 5 years in, but you know what? I think that if you look at my record, I don't vote with the system. I vote against it very often and more for the people. And so with the president needing allies here, him being an outsider and the way they've targeted him, he just needs somebody he can trust, and I think I've proven that he can trust me. He knows that. That's why he endorsed me in January.
So in the 5 years you've been up there, Congressman, what have you learned? What have you taken away, like, wow, didn't realize that, or wow, I think this is the best way to go about it to meet our conservative needs?
You know, I think one thing, and you don't think about, one of the wow moments for me is there are some good people in this fight, guys. The Jim Jordans of the world, the Warren Davidsons, the Mark Meadows, who were here as President Trump's former chief, the guys within the House Freedom Caucus, and even some members that aren't in HFC, that really are good people, and they're here for the right reasons. So I've learned that that in that way there are good people, and the media doesn't do us any favors. They attack the president, they attack conservatives, they call us names, and we try to do the right thing for the country as opposed to whatever the liberals will be pushing. But in addition to that, too, I think in many ways I found that we can get some things done even with a two-vote majority, like the big, beautiful bill. I could tell you guys, when they first dropped that in the House, we had 60 no's on the Republican side, and we only had a two-vote majority, so we couldn't lose but one or two. And I told Speaker Johnson, I said, man, I don't know that we ever get the big, beautiful bill across the finish line, but we did. And so we've been able to work, get some things done, but there is a give and take process here. But we've had very little support from the other side of the aisle on much of anything.
Congressman Barry Moore with us right now. He's running for U.S. Senate, that seat that will soon be vacated by Tuberville, who's running for governor. And of course, you'll be representing the entire state if you do win this race. And you've been, as a congressman, representing a pretty good portion of our listening area down here for a while now. But you know what I'm going to ask? The people down here, we love when good things happen in Alabama. We really love when good things happen in South Alabama. How do you think, as a senator, you could help push some more great things down this way? I mean, you look at what we've got going with the shipbuilding and Austell, but really a lot of people right now are wondering about infrastructure, specifically this big I-10 Mobile River Bridge project that's still really yet to get underway.
Yeah, so I think that the key thing is relationships for us. And I think for me, just being able to call the president and him take our calls when there's a need. And like I said, he calls me a good friend and a fighter. And so I think those relationships, guys, and when you're working like in Congress, you're the vox populi, the voice of the people. So you'll have, like I said, you'll have a congressional district and you fight for that district and you do what you can for that district. As a U.S. senator, you fight for the entire state. But when President Trump talks about the golden age of America, there is truly an opportunity to have a golden age of Alabama. And that we couple workforce development. Obviously, I think we've got the land, labor, and climate conducive to grow. The president loves the state. And I think we've got a good delegation. We've been able to work well together. Obviously, we brought Space Command to Alabama. The FBI headquarters came to North Alabama. When I was in the state legislature, I served two terms there. We brought Austell, Airbus, Polaris, Remington, Kimber Firearms because we begin to decrease regulations and taxes and try to streamline the process so we make it very, very business friendly. And so I think with Governor Tuberville at the helm and with the delegation we've got, we'll continue to see Alabama do well. We've still got to fight for the funding for the bridge. That process has taken, it seems like, decades now, and I've been in it for the last few years with Mobile and the Baldwin County area down there. So we're going to continue to push the president on that, and they're well aware that is a much-needed economic development, but also just a strategic, that I-10 connector, getting people across during storms and military movement, east-west coast. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of benefits to that, and it really truly is a shovel-ready project. So we're going to push on that, and hopefully we can get her finished.
So you've crisscrossed the state, obviously, now running for the first time for a statewide office. What are Alabama voters telling you, maybe you didn't realize, or what are they telling you their top priorities are for you to work on as a U.S. senator?
Well, I think if you look at it, President Trump's at 84% in Alabama. So I think a lot of people that I talk to just say, help him finish what he started. Help him get some things done that need to get done. And obviously the border security. With the thing in Iran, people are curious. That's kind of the uncertainty in the markets on fuel right now. They would like to see us land that plane. And I would, too, certainly before the midterms. I think it's vitally important that we get a resolution there. And I know the president's doing what he can. I think the military operations have worked. The sanctions seem to be working. And so those are things. And just to continue to push, like I said, for common sense, conservative ideas and try to make D.C. a little bit more like Alabama. And we're doing that.
It seems right now we're in maybe a seminal moment in American politics with that Supreme Court ruling in Louisiana versus Calais. And then now this redistricting push. For Alabama specifically, I know a lot of conservatives want to see Ivey and the legislature draw a 7-0 map in favor of Republicans. Looks like we're going 6-1. You look at South Carolina, the Republicans there pushing back against redistricting. I think the governor is going to force that through anyway. Kemp in Georgia has called for a redrawing of maps that won't count for this election, but in the future. What's your take on all of this? And I guess specifically Alabama, would you like to see the state try to draw that map so it's 7-0 in favor of conservatives, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, we better draw at 7-0 because you saw what happened in Virginia a few weeks ago. I mean, we literally have six Dems and five Republicans out of Virginia, and they drew a map with Spanberger, the new governor, that went 10-1. They drew everybody Republican out, and if you look up the Northeast Coast, when you go up, there's nine states, guys, along the Northeast Coast that voted mid-30s to 48% for Trump with zero Republicans. The Democrats have been winning this thing for years, and they've been using race to do that. They've been saying minority, majority, minority, majority, and not the communities of interest. And so I was one of the guys that got drawn out, and then this thing's going to be drawn again. But I think in Alabama, these red states, if we want to have a voice in the process, when you look at California, they got over 50 U.S. House members and only five or six Republicans. So It's not – if we don't, as Alabama, do what we can to help the conservative, the Republicans in Washington, D.C., then we're going to be the victim of failed policies from the left in states like California, Illinois, and the Northeast Coast.
Let me come back local, if you don't mind, Congressman. Looking at the city of Mobile, the metropolitan area, Mobile-Baldwin County, what are the growth opportunities with the right push in D.C.? What is the future of Mobile? How bright could that future be as you become more acquainted with the city and with the people and with the population and the infrastructure? Mobile always seems to be a city on the verge. What can push us over?
Yeah, I think what we're doing, and that, certainly the airport in Mobile, that's got to be a thing we work on. But, you know, for me, it's a matter of just saying, hey, and it's to your point, as I look at that market down there, it reminds me of a campfire. There's some hot coals, and with a little oxygen, it'll take off. And so I think we continue to work with local leaders down there to make sure that the regulatory environment's not prohibitive, make sure that we're doing the things we can to make sure that taxes and our economic development opportunities, the investment to bring good paying jobs. And, you know, I always told the guys when I was running it, you know, I told the mayors, look, if you want a walking trail or a ball field, I'm probably not your guy. But if you want infrastructure, if you want investments on things that are going to grow the economy, I'll be a fighter for you. And so I think we have to continue to do what we can to make investments. But I think number one right now, the key is workforce development for Alabama. As we talk about, you know, industry wants to come. The labor market is always a concern. So you've got to have well-trained young people coming out of schools, tech schools, whatever that looks like, with skills and trades that can fit into industry. And so we have to figure out how we couple not only the economic side of it, the taxes, the incentives to get them there, but then the workforce availability and infrastructure, as you mentioned earlier. All those things are parts of the puzzle. But I think that there is certainly a bright future. I think Mobile and that port is it an economic engine? It's a gold mine for Alabama.
Congressman Barrymore still with us here, running for Senate, and that primary coming up Tuesday. I have to get your take on this. It's such a big conversation in the Senate, and that is the filibuster, the 60-vote threshold, and the will they, won't they. We've been through it with the Democrats. We're going through it with the Republicans. It sure seems like the Democrats, if they regain control, will be at least thinking about doing away with the filibuster. What are your thoughts on all that?
I think they'll absolutely do away with it day one. If the Dems take the Senate, when you look at how they've weaponized and what they've done with government against the president, against many of us, is the minute they can get to see Sinema and Manchin were the only two Dems that held up on nuking the filibuster last time. They're both gone. And if y'all don't think Schumer and those guys won't do it, we're just naive, because I think we need to nuke it now, because there is a bill called the Save America Act right now that would literally make sure that just U.S. citizens with U.S. IDs are voting in U.S. elections to elect U.S. leaders. That, to me, is such a common sense move to eliminate foreign interference, real foreign interference in elections, is letting citizens of other countries vote in your elections. That's silly stuff to me. So I think we need to nuke it, guys. I think we need to go and do away with this needing 10 more Democrats to help us move the president's agenda. That's not going to happen. So I think if we don't do it, they will, and we'd be wishing we had.
You know, to wrap things up here, we've got you and Jared Hudson, Marshall as well. You know, a lot of people are undecided on this. They like all three, or they like parts of all three's positions. But at the same time, you want to be the guy. You want to be the U.S. Senator representing Alabama. So what's the reason they should choose you over the other two?
I think primarily just my record, guys. Like I said, Heritage Action scored me a 100. You have people, and they're good people running all the time. The problem is we've got nobody in the race with any legislative experience but me and relationships with the White House. When I call, the president takes our calls. And day one, when this thing happens in November, we only got 24 months to get the president's agenda across the finish line. We need somebody that can go in immediately and go to work. So we'll be able, having been here 4 or 5 years, I got the relationships that matter. I've also got a team that I can move pretty quick, and the things that matter to us to get this president's America First agenda across the finish line, we don't have a lot of time to do that. And so I think just knowing that I've got a record too, I see people all the time that run as conservatives, and then the lobbyists, the special interests kind of get their hooks in them, and they went in well-intended, but they end up going astray, and I've seen it happen to so many people over the years that it's vitally important that we know somebody's got a record and a willingness to get in there and fight and don't cave to the pressure.
Congressman Barry Moore, we appreciate your time so much this morning. And if people want to find out more about your campaign, especially with that vote coming up very soon in the primary, what can they do?
BarryMooreForAlabama.com, guys. BarryMooreForAlabama.com.
Simple enough. Thank you, Congressman. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Barry Moore there. Primary coming up on Tuesday, and we'll get to your texts and more on the way. 251-343-0106 as Mobile Mornings continues.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
And speaking of the text line, already reaction to our conversation with Congressman Barry Moore as mm-hmm. he runs for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and get to a couple of these. Let's see. Typical politician. He's even promoting people who have been in Congress far too long. Mommy Issue says, I looked up Moore's voting and bills. Funny, he's been there 5 years. What has he done? Opposed the federal legalization of recreational marijuana, but supported some medical marijuana research and banking measures. Voted against some bipartisan social spending and veterans-related bills, including a veterans food insecurity bill in 2022. And Mommy Issues finishes saying Alabama continues to vote in worthless legislative members expecting change. Now, I mean, I was researching what Moore has done. Obviously, we were interviewing him. And I don't know which search machine you're using. I saw several other pieces of legislation he's brought and passed, like making illegal immigrants convicted of DUI offenses deportable. Passed that a few years ago. He's made several legislation that he's sponsored targeting H-1B visas. Immigration. He had one bill that would require a citizenship question on the census and then base congressional apportionment on citizens rather than total population.
Yeah.
Also, some voting amendments here, abolishing the Department of Education. That's legislation he reintroduced last year, which obviously is not passed at this point. He sponsored legislation requiring a full audit of the Federal Reserve. So, I mean, what you laid out there, Mommy Issues, not exactly the full story. But, you know, I am sensing some pushback against Moore here.
Just a career politician, some of you are saying. I thought it was a fair question of you when you said, look, you promote yourself as an outsider, and yet you've been up there in Washington, D.C. for five, six years. Yeah, so, you know, when are you now an insider? When are you part of the machine?
Well, and he said, well, more or less, is President Trump still an outsider?
Yep.
What do you think? Is Trump still? I'd say yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a way. And he's been there longer than that. So I don't know. Would love, who are you voting for in that race? Who are you voting for in the Senate race? 251-343-0106. Or are you still undecided? You know, some of these polls we've been seeing here last week or two, this close to the primary, still a ton of undecideds in a lot of these races.
Jared Hudson is getting a ton of support in the Birmingham area. You've seen those numbers up there.
Yeah.
It's 8:30 FM Talk 106.5. We will talk with Rob Hobart from Lanyap Mobile, and we'll do that next.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:35 on a Thursday.
It is. And since it's a Thursday, we get to talk to our friend Rob Hobart from Lanyap and online, lanyapmobile.com. And why don't we kick it off by saying, in nappy voting, we will not be having any special elections. These are set to go on as planned, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Nappy votes are going as planned. There's no redistricting in the Nappies. Everything is as it was.
Good. Good.
Continue on. Yeah, keep voting. I wish the voting's out of control. We are on seriously record pace right now. It is crazy. So
that's every year.
Keep going.
Every year you talk about record pace, and then you break another record the year after. It's crazy.
Well, it was. You know, we thought. You know, actually, we shut down any voting that may come from outside the United States because there's just efforts to cheat, and so. We thought, well, that's going to get some of this stuff out of there, and it's still just people are voting like crazy. So,
yeah. So you have a way now to know when that's happening. Are there still people out there like trying to get people to pay them
absolutely.
To do that?
Yes. In fact, I put something up online yesterday that I saw somebody, one of the contestant or a finalist, sent us something that they've been approached by somebody from. Some place in Destin, and guy saying basically like, if you don't win, you don't have to pay us. Like, you're not going to win because it kicks it out. So, you know, don't pay those guys. It's just a waste of money.
Yeah, I think it's stupid unless they're voting for FM Talk. I think that's a really bad thing.
It's really stupid unless that.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have a whole bunch of just slaves in your back of your office doing that stuff.
Yeah, I'll get to work on that.
We don't
that,
even
actually.
Have a bunch of people in the back of the office doing office stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Let alone corrupt stuff.
Yeah. Well, Rob, let's talk about that redistricting. And I think things are beginning to settle in a way. It was a lot more confusing at the beginning of the week. Still, question is, what will that federal court do about this? But for everything I've seen, it looks like we're moving ahead. We'll have the primaries next week. They'll then discard the votes for districts 1, 2, 6, and 7. And then the runoff in June, which we thought they may put the special primaries on that day to save a little money. But Ivy calling for the special primary elections August 11th. No runoff. And then you go right into the general in November. Your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I mean, it is confusing, of course. And, I mean, you still have situations where we're trying to figure out, you know, Shamari Figures hasn't figured out what he's going to do. Is he going to continue to run in District 2, even though he doesn't live in that district, or would he run in District 1? And, you know, those both are tough challenges for him, I think. Really flips the script for him in that regard. Then, you still just have a lot of, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of folks who don't get the word. They're going to go vote and think they voted for somebody, and their vote's going to get tossed out. And then over all of this, you have the same judicial group, the same judges who said that this map was unconstitutional are now supposed to decide whether it's constitutional again. You know, it's kicked back to them. I think people may misunderstand that what the Supreme Court did was kick it back down to that appellate court.
Yeah.
It's not a done deal yet. There's even a possibility we can end up having to redraw maps again. So, you know, all these things, you know, which would probably require another special session. There's still a lot of confusion out there. I think you're right that it has settled down some, that some of the players have said, hey, I'm going to go, you know, and like Brett Marks says, I'm running in District 2. Some of these people have made their decisions on where they're going. And a lot of people may not realize that for congressional races, you just have to live in the state.
Yeah, that's right.
The requirements are much lower. I mean, we get caught up in the whole thing with Tommy Tuberville, and it's 7 years to be governor, but to run for Congress, it's basically like one day. You just have to move here, and you can be here, and you can run.
And speaking of Tuberville, and that's a primary that really hasn't generated a lot of discussion, like who you're voting for, because it almost seems like Tuberville is a slam dunk to win that. But you still have this lawsuit from GOP competitor Ken McFeeters, and the ALGOP talking a little bit about whether the courts have jurisdiction in that or not.
Yeah, that's of course they're going to say that. I think that that's their biggest concern. I don't think McFeeters is their biggest concern. I think their biggest concern is that once the general starts, that the other assumed, his assumed competitor,
Doug Jones,
from the Democratic side, Doug Jones, will file suit on that matter as well. And, you know, so they're trying to make the point that nobody except the legislature can make this decision. I don't know. I'm not a legal scholar, and I don't know exactly where that goes. It seems odd to me that the judges, that a judge could not decide that, or that courts wouldn't make that decision versus a legislature, which is completely political. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm sure that they would much prefer it that way, but I don't know if that's going to be the case.
Also, you have a story up on Secretary of State Wes Allen, who is also up for election next week.
Yeah.
And some Kristi Noem-like allegations here. And it's the Common Sense Campaign, which we know well down here in South Alabama, accusing Allen of using election education ads to promote his image and likeness leading up to this campaign, where he'll be on the ballot for lieutenant governor next week.
Yeah, you know, obviously the Common Sense Campaign is supporting Allen's competitor, John Wall. So, you know, you take everything like that with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. But when we talked to the previous Secretary of State, John Merrill, about it, he had some pretty strong words about what Wes Allen had done.
I noticed that,
he unloaded on him, and that kind of got our attention. And you know, Merrill says he's not picking anybody in the race, but he just said that what he had done in the past was much cheaper. It involved a lot of getting a lot of celebrities involved and people that are well known to, you know, these are get out the vote commercials, and they are required to get out the vote advertising and that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. You know, he says, hey, look, I got all these folks doing it. I got Nick Saban, I've got all these other folks doing these things, and they weren't charging us anything. And he threw all that out the window and then put himself in $1.4 million worth of commercials across the state over the last 6 months. And, you know, more than that now at this point, but it started about 6 months before he announced his campaign. And that's, you get into that whole Kristi Noem situation where people are saying, hey, you're making yourself the star of the commercials, which is free advertising for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can get into the devil's advocate. I mean, you know, sheriffs do that for their, you know, they're running for election, but they're also, they've got commercials saying, you know, talking about public safety. There's mm-hmm. all sorts of things. I mean, I get that to a degree. I think the big part is that you look at is that what Merrill said was, hey, his results were really poor in terms of voter registration compared to what we were doing before. It's not even a contest that, you know, he spent a lot more money, put himself in it, and had a much poorer result. Of course, Wes Allen says, hey, that's all BS. We're just doing what we're supposed to do. So
people are more likely to register if Lionel Richie tells them to than if Wes Allen does.
That seems to be the case.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
if he sings it to them that they should register to vote,
they'll completely lose their mind. especially the demographic of ladies 65 and up.
Yeah.
So what Merrill was saying was that the commercials are largely ineffective, right? Like they're not doing the job. And then you could argue on the other side, look, it's the perks of being in office. You're already in office, so you can promote yourself in that way. Like, hey, I'm so-and-so. Like, I'm the
Secretary of State.
I'm Secretary of State, so I'm a big deal.
It gets into that whole area of, are you using public money for personal gain mm-hmm. type thing? And, of course, it's not really provable. It's just a matter of, I think, it's a matter of opinion, but it is, I think, you know, when we first saw, you know, when we first got them calling and saying, hey, he's done this, it's like, okay, it's politics season, but we said, let's call John Merrill and ask him what he thinks and see where he stands on this thing. And it was kind of surprising to hear what he had to say. So it's out there, and, you know, I mean, obviously, Wes Allen's, his campaign has pushed back against that very hard. So, you know, you can take it for what it is.
Yeah. And those votes, that primary coming up in just a few days.
Allen himself's been kind of a AWOL of some of these forums and debates and things like that. I think Allen hasn't really had the most pristine attendance, almost like he feels like he's coasting on in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Let's talk some local stuff, too. And, you know, construction at the new arena, it's been going swimmingly because we've been in a major drought. There hasn't been much weather to worry about slowing things right. down.
Now the construction workers are actually swimming.
Yeah, now they're actually swimming. Yeah. 4 inches of rain in 1 hour over the weekend. But we also learned this week through Land Yaps reporting that we knew Regions was the new arena sponsor. Now we know how much they're paying for their name to be up on the side of that arena.
Yeah, it's close to $15 million over, I think, 10 years. Or
yeah, 12 years. Yeah, 12 years.
12 years. 12 years. So, I mean, it's, pretty good chunk of change. And I think more than most people probably thought they were going to get for that. So, that's a win for the arena, I think.
Yeah. And the mayor, too, he's one of them that said this like doubled what they expected for the arena sponsor.
Yeah.
To be paying. I think that's kind of interesting, and you know, whether there were any competitive bids or whether Regions just walked into the store and said, I want to buy that, and this is how much I'm going to buy it for.
All I can tell you is our bid was not competitive. The Land Yap Arena, we were not competitive. I think it's, you know, it's great for the arena, and it shows that there's some interest in it, and I guess obviously some hope that it's going to be a really important part of what we're doing around here, and it's coming up pretty fast, and if they can get that swimming pool out of the middle of it now, they'll move along.
Rob, that's exciting news for your staff, because you really, I mean, as the crow flies, you're like a couple of blocks from that arena. Watching that thing go up is going to be pretty exciting. It's going to be a beautiful building.
It's moving fast. I've been really amazed how quick that it's coming up, and to, you know, I drive past there almost every day on the way to work, and it is really flying. So it's going to be cool to see it. We'll have that online. Hopefully we'll have the airport online, shortly after that. And so there's a lot of new stuff coming up.
Yeah, sure is. Well, if folks want to read along as all of that new stuff comes up, there's no better place to check it out than Land Yap and landyapmobile.com. How can people sign up for that subscription online? And if they'd rather go, I think, like Sean says every week, get some ink on their hands and read the paper from the boxes, how can they do that?
Yeah, the boxes are everywhere, purple boxes. If you really want to read everything we're doing, go online. We're publishing 60 or 70 news stories a week online, so there's a lot of news that is there every day. That's why it's Land Yap Daily. So check it out there. It's a dollar for the first month. It's 30 cents a day after that, $9 a month. So it's not going to break the bank. It's not going up like gasoline. It's going to stay.
I like that.
So, yeah.
Sounds good, Rob. Thanks for spending.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You got it. Spending time with us on this Thursday, as he does every Thursday. Rob Holbert with Land Yap.
Yeah, and we would appreciate your votes at votenappies.com. We're up for favorite FM radio station, and then a number of categories in those radio station media.
Well, you got to take a bow, because you're up for a singular award by yourself, which is pretty impressive.
Which one? Which one is that? Which one are you talking about?
One that you're like some sort of like a radio personality.
Oh, so Sean. Yeah, Sean's in that too.
Yeah,
Sean
and
me up for best overall radio personality. Now for best talk show host, it's going to be some tough choices for people out there that are listening. We have Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, Jeff Poor, and Sean Sullivan. We haven't started running the pack ads against each other yet, but get ready. I've got a real mean one coming for you.
Well, you know, when I finish fourth in that race, I won't be disappointed. I'm just glad that my key card works. 8:49, Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings, and more on Big Creek Lake on the way.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for all of your texts this morning, 251-343-0106. Story number three in our three big things was this right here, routine dive repair at a federally recognized Mobile Dam, that would be up there, Big Creek Lake, led to the unexpected discovery as divers found a hidden explosive device.
How hidden was it? It was already underwater.
You know, I've got so many questions about this. How hidden was it? What is a grenade type IED as opposed to a grenade? I don't know. So I'd like to see the thing. I'd like to see how they found it. None of that is really clear at this point, right?
Yeah, I want to see pictures.
Yeah. So anyway, you on the text line want to see a lot of stuff too to help explain all this. And many of you are conspiracy theorists saying this was not a real thing, that this was something, which I think that the story kind of has gotten into the rearview mirror. I don't see that Malls would be doing anything like this nefariously.
No, and I don't think either, but it shows you how much work I feel Malls needs to do
To repair
some dang relationships.
Yep.
I mean,
I'd agree with that.
I understand why some of you are going at the theory that way, that they want more control, right, over a lake that they already gained more control of than anyone that uses it wanted to see. But just the fact that people, and a majority of people, by the way, that are texting in this morning, feel that that is a real possibility. I've told you my theory. I think there were some
good old boys
back in the day that were trying to do the old dynamite in the barrel, dynamite in the lake, and see what comes up. And maybe that's the case. Maybe not. Maybe someone really was committing a act of terror. I don't know.
Look, there's
until
been cases,
we get more information.
But there are documented cases of people trying to blowing up things in the past as a way to perform the best, most efficient fishing.
Yes.
And we have evidence of that, too.
Yeah, one of you sent in this fantastic Jerry Clower clip.
Hilarious.
Where fishing with the game warden. I have to play this. Now, this is my theory on what happened out at Big Creek Lake before. These search teams found the grenade-like IED. Here's Jerry Clower.
I went to see Marcel Ledbetter the other day. His brother Claude was the only one in the community catching any fish. Folks was going and they wasn't catching nothing. Old Claude Ledbetter, he'd come in with a pickup truck loaded down. So the State Game and Fish Commission of Mississippi decided they'd go fishing with Claude, just see how he was catching them. Claude had told them, popped off, said, y'all don't know how to do it. Said, y'all ought to just go with me and watch me. Well, a game warden got up in the boat with him, and they took off out in the middle of the river. And the game warden said, all right, Claude, I'm going to see how you catching all these fish when can't nobody else catch none. Claude raised the lid on the boat seat and got a big, long stick of dynamite. Lit the fuse on it, let it go down to kind of short and draw it back and chunked it. Boom! And them big catfish come turning their belly up, whooping it out of that water, and Claude is just getting them by the tub full. Game warden said, boy, that's against the law. You can't do that. Don't you know you breaking the law? Well, Claude's done lit another big stick of dynamite. Handed it to the game warden. It going, shh. Game warden took that stick of dynamite and said, you idiot, this is against the law. You can't do this. Claude said, you going to sit there and argue or fish?
I knew. I didn't remember there was Jerry Clower. I remember I was introduced to Jerry Clower back early in my radio career on a country station in Athens, Georgia, and I knew a few people. Like I've told you stories about Speedy.
Oh my goodness,
very Jerry Clower like.
Yeah,
you know, probably fashioned some of his routine after Jerry Clower. But what a guy that can deliver on a story. And I think Jerry Clower was like a seed and feed store salesperson.
Nah. That's where he built his chops.
That's
there.
Where he built his chops, right?
That's too good. Damn Yankee says his Southern talk is a little over the top. I think it works and worked well. Greg says Yazoo City, Mississippi's Jerry, love it. Matt says, morning, guys. I don't live with a tinfoil hair like some conspiracy theorists do regarding Big Creek Lake, but even I don't believe anything Maz has to say, just based on their historical past of lying and how they have handled this whole fiasco. That's what Matt has to say. Earl said Maz set the whole thing up. The lake was drained years ago to repair the spillway. That's why, you know, and I don't give too much advice out there. I think we need some images. We need a presser to kind of clear this up, because right now, I think Maz would be surprised how many people think they're, no one believes them.
And if we don't get any of that, that says volumes too, right?
Hey, Tommy Tuberville joins Jeff right here at the top of the show. Stay tuned.